Okay, welcome back to episode 145. Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. I'm in lockdown, but still struggling. Yeah. How are you?
Any strolls on the beach or anything like that?
Oh yeah, no. We have a very it's kind of a vacation period for us. We go exactly where we want, drive around. They haven't locked us down in that sense. It's just kind of eerie because you walk down like our business street and all the businesses are closed, very few people. And then you get absolutely bizarre human interactions. Before we were on the air, I was mentioning that I was in Trader Joe's buying food. You have to wait to go in because they're enforcing the 6-foot social distance between everyone. And there was this new human phenomena that I call the dance of the social distancing people. And it's like, so I was in this aisle and there was this fat guy who didn't have good balance. And he stumbled forward, entering the 6-foot social distancing zone of these two people. They then lurched the other direction, setting off a chain reaction. This ended up with these three nimble young women who had all had their distance violated, and they pirouetted off to create the space that the fat guy and everybody else could move into. And,
you could videotape it and play like Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies or something.
Like, I just sat there just going, man, I mean, what a nation of sheep, you know, to be able to get people to put up with this crap.
If a lady gets within 6 feet of you, does that mean she's coming on to you?
Well, I think you mentioned today that that one of the governors had advocated social distancing at home.
Yeah, there was the New Jersey's esteemed governor. He suggested at a press conference that people should now practice social distancing at home.
That's not going to help the sex life much.
I guess he lives in a bigger house than most people.
I guess he does, you know. I mean, this is just so.
Now, why wasn't he laughed off the podium or laughed out of the room by the press corps? That was
yeah, exactly. Why not? Because laughter is necessary, because it is, on one level, just completely ridiculous. On the other, it's just the most horrible, it can be seen as the advent of the fantasy that people have about what it was like in the Soviet Union during the worst part of the repressive era, you know, with Stalin. Yeah. I mean, that's what you're looking at. And yet here you have these pirouetting 6-foot distance dancers, you know, everyone is in compliance. And this, you know, goes to the topic that we're going to be talking about, the manufacturing of mind control, you know, how they're able to get people to be so, inhuman. So Tim, first of all, I think we should do like, kind of an update on the COVID-19 pandemic. And then maybe you could give us a summation of of what mind control is and how we're threatened by it.
Sure. I saw an interesting post at 21st Century Wire today. Worldwide deaths from January 1st to March 25th, 2020. At that time, there were 21,297 deaths by coronavirus, supposedly. We all know how problematic that is. At that time, the seasonal flu had taken 113,000 lives. Malaria, 228,000 lives. Suicide, almost 250,000 lives. Traffic fatalities, 313,000 lives. Supposedly AIDS, whatever that is, 390,000 lives. Alcohol, I guess alcohol-related deaths, I don't know if that's abuse or disease, that's 581,000 lives, or almost 582,000. Smoking-related deaths, 1,162,000 lives. Cancer, almost 2 million lives. Hunger, that's interesting, because hunger killed 2,382,000. And, of course, abortion, 9,913,702. Put that in perspective. Now, of course, the corona cases, I checked this this morning. As of this morning, there were 1,088,338 corona cases, 58,448 deaths, and 228,005 recoveries. It's still sticking at a 95% mild condition and 5% serious or critical. That's been that way from the get-go, from what I understand. In the United States, we are now reporting 270,062 cases, a whopping 6,927 deaths. I think we're well over 23,000 deaths from seasonal flu in the United States. In Virginia, my state, 2,012 cases, 46 deaths. And for that, the economy has been shut down by our esteemed governor. California, your home state, 11,207 cases, 246 deaths. Interestingly enough, in 2017, the state reported 6,340 deaths from flu. Let's see here. Overall mortality rate, 219,597 people died in California in 2017. So you have 246 deaths, supposedly, from corona. You mentioned today there was a guy, really, terminal brain cancer, who died, and originally they didn't count him as a coronavirus victim. Then he tested positive, and there you go. This is interesting. New York today had apparently had a bad day. Governor Cuomo claiming well over 500 people died. 567 died in one day, he's claiming. Again, we know how problematic that is, how they misattribute coronaviruses, deaths to coronaviruses. Of course, in the state, 122,736 died, I think that was in 2017. So roughly about 125,000, 130,000 die a year in New York in any given year. That's about 336 per day. I mentioned what was going on in Italy. It was interesting status. Italy reported less overall deaths between the months of January, February, March this year than in 2019. I think it was 165,000 this year, and it was like 183,000 the year before. So if there was a pandemic that took tens of 10,000, 12,000 lives in Italy, you'd expect to see that increase in the overall mortality rate, and you actually saw a slight drop by those statistics. The UK government on March 19th announced that no longer considered the coronavirus or COVID-19 to be a high consequence infectious disease. They downgraded it. Put that in perspective. Again, the flu in any given year, on average, the flu results in anywhere from 9 million to 49 million illnesses each year in the United States. This is since 2010, so I guess it waxes and wanes depending on the year. Each year, an average of 5 to 20% of the United States, the population gets the flu. There are 31.4 million outpatient visits and over 200,000 hospitalizations during the 2017-2018 flu season. 900,000 people were hospitalized, and more than 80,000 people died from the flu. That's compared to our reported death numbers, which is 6,927 deaths. So now, despite all this, the Washington Post, the other day, the Trump administration, I think through Anthony Fauci, said that the deaths from coronavirus could be as much as 100,000, 240,000. Interestingly enough, he did put a timeline on that. I mean, is he talking 10 years, 5 years, 3 years, 6 months? But I would assume within the year he meant that. And there's an article in the Washington Post this morning. Experts and Trump's advisors doubt White House's 240,000 coronavirus death estimate. Leading disease forecasters whose research whose research the White House used to conclude that 100,000 to 240,000 people will die nationwide from the coronavirus, were mystified when they saw the administration's projection this week. The experts said they don't challenge the numbers' validity. Why not? But they don't know how the White House arrived at them. The White House officials have refused to explain how they generated the figure. A death toll bigger than the United States suffered in the Vietnam War or the 9/11 terrorist attacks. They have not provided the underlying data so others can assess its reliability and provide long-term strategies to lower the death count. Some of President Trump's top advisors have expressed doubts about the estimate, according to three White House officials who spoke on the conditions of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. There have been fierce debates inside the White House about its accuracy. So there's an ongoing struggle, looks like. But looks like for the time being, the White House has gone crazy with this. They've joined the madness. Today, Trump talked about, recommending people wearing masks every day when they go out. You know, so I was thinking maybe getting one of those beaked plague masks they wore during the Black Death. Just to really go, just make a real fashion statement there. So that's where we are. So now, why is this? We cite the numbers, and each week it just doesn't seem to justify it. But we have these harrowing news accounts, news reports. We have headlines, surging this, surging that. We have these daily press conferences by Governor Cuomo, spreading fear. I talked to you off mic where apparently the governor of Connecticut claimed that an infant had recently died from coronavirus, right? Saying it was linked to coronavirus. It turns out the poor infant died in an accident, and they tested the baby post-mortem, and they claimed that the baby tested positive for coronavirus, and it went down as a coronavirus statistic. And now, why is he doing this? Spread fear among mothers and expected mothers in the state. Why do you want to spread fear? Well, that's part of the objective here. They want to spread fear because it's easier to control, and it's also to, extract more plunder from society. You can get more aid from the federal government. Maybe that's his agenda at the level he's operating on. So we have this contradiction. It's almost like a double bind, right? I mean, we have all this contradictory information, historical, current, that simply doesn't seem to justify the hysteria and fear that's being churned up by the Trump administration, by virtually every state government, the media in itself. So what we're seeing is an operation going on, because what they've done is they've created sort of a double bind. That's part of this mind control. It's sort of a psyop where the facts don't comport with the political rhetoric or the claims, the official claims. And the average citizen, to the extent that he is informed, is kind of like, what's going on here? Am I going crazy or is the system crazy? And this, and I think we can talk about that. I have this type of situation, the trauma we're seeing induced, the fear we're seeing induced, the hyped up fear, the exaggeration of the inflating the idea of the enemy, the other, these things. This is a strategy that has been, studied for decades, even more than a century. It became very scientific and refined in the 20th century, particularly in England and in the United States. There's the Tavistock Institute, and then Tavistock Institute was a sort of extended in the United States with the RAND Corporation. And now we see with NGOs and of course, all the we'll see with the establishment of mass media, a lot of the figures who formed mass media, Frank Stanton, I think, was one, came out of Tavistock. He was part of the Princeton Radio Project, which we can talk about tonight, their involvement in the 1938 Halloween Eve broadcast of War of the Worlds, and how that was there to test the power of the media to create mass hysteria. And we're seeing that now because the media now, the establishment, the mainstream media, seems to be determined not to manipulate, to raise fear, to create trauma, not to inform or educate people on this issue. And if you just do cursory, look up some of the counter narratives or arguments, that simply, at the very least, you'd expect some debate on the TV shows or in the mainstream press, or questions being asked of various governors and even the president, and these questions aren't being asked, like the ones I raised. So we're seeing some sort of operation going on here, and we there's a history to this because mass media, particularly electronic media, radio, television, and even the it was developed with the idea of mass mind control and also imposing mass trauma. At least it was studied and enhanced. And a lot of the research into mass communication in the middle part of the 20th century was financed by the intelligence agencies and the war departments. And there's a book by that called The Science of Coercion by Christopher Simpson, which goes in. It's a very short book, but it gets into the Princeton Radio Project and the development of radio and television and how it was studied, and also financed. Its expansion was financed by the government, particularly in the early stages, in its infancy. So now we're talking about mass media and mass mind control, and that might explain what's going on here today, because we have all these accounts, people going to hospitals, news reports about hospitals being overwhelmed, then you have people go there on their own accord the next day, nothing seems to be going on. What's going on here? There's that double bind. What's going on? This doesn't seem to make any sense. If these hospitals are indeed as overwhelmed as they say they are, they should, when people walk in, they should see some high level or increased activity, and at least it's not being reported as such, nor do their video reports suggest anything out of the ordinary. Even some hospitals seem actually kind of slow, more than I'd expect during cold and flu season. Joe, what do you have to say about that?
Well, we have been studied, and they have learned how to control our minds. It's a long, sad thing, but I just kind of wanted to, I was hoping to just go for a second back and look at the history of it, because I do think there's some, it's very important to look at how the three components of this process kind of interact. And the three components are the Freemasons, military intelligence, and basically what can be called Jewish financial interests. Okay, so I think that's a fair assessment of the three components of the funding and of kind of moving of personnel and setting up the different parts of the project. You can start it all the way back at the Frankfurt School, which was basically the precursor of the American Jewish Committee's Authoritarian Personality Project. But I think it's kind of easier just to, start people off like in 1934, where you had the Rockefellers and the Freemasons funding Norman D.C. Lewis's study of mental illness. And it was basically it was controlled by the Freemasons. Lewis was one of the head Freemasons, and he would give reports to the Scottish Rite Northern Supreme Council on the progress of the 14th research projects being financed by the Freemasons. So this was between 1934 and 36. He worked with the results of this information. He worked with Dr. Winfield Overholser, and he was the superintendent of St. Elizabeth Hospital, which later became infamous as an MK Ultra hotbed. And he was recorded as this Overholser as the Scottish Rite of Freemason strategist. So this was how they had leadership for the psychiatric research. Then in 42, Bill Donovan, he was head of the OSS. He got together with Overholser, and he created a team, and he said, we have to learn, how to make a truth serum. So they started experimenting with drugs in the brain. And it was the idea of like cracking commie spies, but they were also trying to, if you look at the documents, they're trying to get control over human personality. Now, this is one of the really useful things about going through the kind of history is because you can see the names of the individuals who we've talked about in other areas. You mentioned some of them, but I'm betting that you don't know who actually founded the National Association for Mental Health in 1944, which then gathered together all these individuals that Overholser had been working with. I won't actually ask you. It was Montague Norman.
A banker?
Yeah, good old Montague Norman, who had funded the Nazi Party, and of course, basically was a theosophist, and I mean, and of course, a huge Freemason. He resigned from the Bank of England and decided that he really needed to help the world's mental health. So he created this, and then, of course, he brought in as president the head of Tavistock, the Freemason John Rawling Rees, who was famous for his experiments with basically trauma-based mind control. There's a good guy to help out with the World Federation of Mental Health, but he needed some other humanists to help with the project, so he decided to bring in Ewan Cameron.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this is getting funny because this is, of course, the same guy who then, did the infamous experiments later on, and the most horrific kind of human experimentation imaginable.
Yeah, psychic driving and all that.
Now, at this point, the group picks up. Some of them go off and they work with the Princeton Radio Project. But others then are brought in by Montague Norman, and they have meetings, and there's names we'll remember, but of course the most important one is Horkheimer. He is there with Montague Norman and his little collection of Freemasons and insane psychiatric torturers, and they then begin the American Jewish Committee. This group, I mean, many of them go over, they work with the American Jewish Committee to set up the authoritarian personality. Horkheimer is there, and Horkheimer and Adorno attend the Macy Conference, the cybernetics, that's the infamous cybernetics component of the Macy Conference. Now, here you have the mind control that we're going to be affected with today being developed.
No, I'm sorry, Joe. It was the Macy Conference because it was, funded by the Macy Foundation, right?
Yes, it was founded by a guy who was, I mean, he was a cover for the CIA. You end up with him. I had that all set up, but now I've lost it. Hold on a second. Let me just see if I can pull it.
But I'm just saying, because these foundations, because of course it was the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation who played a big role in this event 201.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well. So what happens is that now you have the cybernetics group, which mm-hmm. has Adorno, Horkheimer. And once again, you get overlap of personalities. You get Rees is there. But they bring in other people. And at a certain point, you actually have projects that are being developed in the cybernetics component of the Macy Foundation that are getting funding from this new CIA project called MKUltra. Okay, so it's just passed directly along. In fact, it's really, if you overview it, there's really no distinction. Same people, money's coming from a different place. There's a way that the CIA is getting money using basically these entities, these business entities, but the money is all basically this funding from the MKUltra. Now, at this point, in the Macy Conference, you had in the cybernetics, you had John von Neumann and Norbert Wiener, and they were developing the idea of programming the human mind, coding the human mind. They were computer people, actually very early computer people, and so now the two great basically technologies that come directly out of this stream are starting to be developed. One is drugs, basically LSD, and all of the way that they can affect people's, through chemicals. And the other is the computer. And particularly now it goes into the personal computer, which I think you can see now, just to, close the circle, you can see how, like, the baby boomer, my generation, was given LSD for years and then cocaine, had access to all kinds of drugs. This can't have made him, or her, less able to think clearly. But then you had, at a certain point, the fruit of the other half of the project, which is the personal computer, which miniaturizes down into the smartphone. And if you look at the today's project, the onset of worldwide lockdown and this, you know, this weird coronavirus, you know, kind of project, it wouldn't really be possible without the personal computer and the smartphone. It's part and parcel, because that's how people get instant information. And because the information is so directly into their mind, there's hardly any vetting. There's hardly any thought. If you look at someone, you know, groups of people, you know, using smartphones, I'm pretty sure they've got it worked out as the way the thing operates and the way that the device is, you know, set up. It's just very good at getting information into people's minds. And of course, because they can control the algorithms, right? We know now with Google and things that if you try to search on, you know, coronavirus to find some models which don't have the world population being wiped out, you don't get there, right? So you can see that this is, you know, as we sit here now with coronavirus and the, you know, the martial law being, you know, onset, you've really had this very long process that, you know, the same individuals move back and forth between the different components. They have different camouflages. Typically, it's like the original Freemason project of studying mental illness, which was the first LSD experimentations. But if you keep looking and put it in context, you end up with clarity, because then you get to all of the, you know, Yun Cameron and, you know, Rees and the trauma-based mind control study. And you can see that, you know, the Freemasons aren't trying to help anybody's mental health. They're just creating a pretext of scholarship so that they can then do the experimentation they want. What is really in back of all this is basically mind control. So when you read like The Authoritarian Personality, chapter 23, and you talk about how they're going to use arrows as propaganda against the Europeans, you are, you know, looking at basically a declaration of what the project is. Then you go forward into, you know, the counterculture with the drugs and the sex. And again, you're seeing propaganda, but the term is just, you know, it's just basically mind control. And now they have this, the other half, which is the personal computer miniaturized so that everyone is staring at them, and they can get out the news bulletins to create the horror porn, right, of, you know, all of these weird statistics and numbers and, oh my God, Italy has, you know, 3,000 deaths. You know, this is what we're suffering with. I don't think that anyone who actually looks at the trajectory, the funding sources and, you know, and the different specific projects that are being created to control society, I don't think anyone could really look at that and not see that this is just a long-standing project, long-standing. What you're seeing today was planned, you know, 75 years ago. This is what they intended to do.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the idea of the pandemic or the contagion, where they rolled these operations out with, you know, H1N1, SARS, MERS, swine flu, and now this. And each stage they tested the reaction,
yeah,
perhaps, kind of gearing the public up for this. The part of the mind control, of course, is media. Not just what's being reported as news, but also entertainment. And that's sort of movies like Contagion and all these outbreak in these movies. This, so people get the idea of what to expect in these things. And it's interesting that a movie like Contagion, where it's almost like it's exactly played out the way this thing is, at least initially reported, is playing out, you know, out of a market in Asia somewhere, in exotic Asia or some unclean wet market, you know, these things, and that's going to offend Western sensibilities about, you know, food preparation, these things. So get that going, you know. But I don't know if people have gone to an industrial, you know, like sort of a slaughterhouse. not very clean either. but industrialized farming itself is a good source of these diseases. This is the part of the narrative. They blame the virus because that way the mega corporations that own industrialized food production aren't liable for the poisoning, either the food and also not, but also the workers there. For example, the swine flu epidemic started out of reporting out of Longoria, Mexico, and there was a huge industrialized pig farm there, close to a million pigs or something, and it created a sort of a feces and urine lagoon that you can see from space, and it wasn't proper, you know, facilities there, sanitation facilities there, and that, you know, exposure to that and also with the chemicals that were being used there made people sick, and it was reported as swine flu. And of course, the CDC doing their duty at the, I think it was the, they call it the EID, the Epidemiological Intelligence Service, EIS or something, I think something like that, went and they, lo and behold, they found a virus that was causing it. And, you know, it turns out it wasn't a virus. It was actually just people being exposed to chemical, toxic chemicals. And but that way, the company's not responsible, liable for the poisoning there. And that's the big function of this sort of this infectious disease narrative in people like Anthony Fauci is to provide cover, and so the function of the CDC and the World Health Organization is to provide cover, you know, for big capital, these big corporations, and also to secure a constant flow of billions of dollars in the coffers of big pharma. And there's a reason our article today about the World Health Organization, how it's partially funded by pharmaceutical companies.
Right,
you know, GlaxoSmithKline and these things. So it's a reason why, you know, wonder why there's a revolving door and bribery's going on, bribery going on all the time, because they're going to produce the reports and create the narrative that support the interest of big pharma, and perhaps wider and larger interests above that, because that's part of the control system that's being imposed. This sort of medical martial law, which is being imposed by the medical cartel, which is perhaps the most dangerous cartel because it doesn't fly any political banners. It does under the cover of science and public health. And we're seeing today public health is a great excuse for imposing repressive, you know, carrying out repressive measures and fundamentally changing the economy, collapsing the economy. Today, public health is taking the front seat and the economy be damned. And they're citing that they have to save lives. You can't worry about the economy, but the economy supports life. And if you do collapse the economy and impose misery on society, austerity, which I think is one of the objectives here, it's part of their Agenda 2030 being carried out here, is to lower everyone's standard of living and impose austerity and use the virus as a cover. But if you impose austerity and you reduce standard of living, at least to the numbers they're talking about, the St. Louis Fed's predicting 32% unemployment. I mean, that's not politically sustainable, and you can't maintain social cohesion in an environment like that. So I don't know what they think they're doing. It's scary to think about. I don't know if they're going to carry it that far. This is, again, part of that Tavistock mind control trauma-based thing where they're just throwing those numbers out to scare the heck out of the people. But if you do create conditions like that where you have mass unemployment, millions, tens of millions of unemployed who are hungry, many of them are going to get sick. And lo and behold, when that does happen, the CDC will come around, there'll be an epidemic or a pandemic, and they'll say, look, a virus caused this, because everyone's immune system will be weakened by the anxiety, fear, and malnutrition that they'll suffer under depressed economic conditions. And that's how they got everyone, that's how they trick everyone here.
And they have, just to kind of step out a foot from that and to talk about the different ways that the mind control is an operation against us, because it's through the mainstream and it's through like the double bind of insane politicians making basically, anti-rational claims, and what is the person to do? He's got a smartphone in front of him and all this information is just swirling around. It just creates a sense of panic. But remember, we have been panicked, basically, because panic, I think, is critical for the project.
Yeah.
Panic, because this is a state in which we cannot think.
Yeah, you switch to right brain thinking when that happens.
Yeah, and so when they give these numbers, it's done for the idea, particularly they're just so fake. But there's other ways that they panic us, and I was going to, I knew this would occur, but I was amused when I actually saw it happen today, because, the the zombie films are basically, you know, a long-standing project to set us up to have no humanity, in other words, no clarity of mind, mm-hmm. and in a panic state, you know, murder our neighbors when they are sick and hungry. So, you know, how do they transition the zombie films into reality? Things like Z Nation and, you know, Z Apocalypse, you know, they have all of these zombie kind of things. Well, anyway, you know, Mike Adams, who is, you know, supposedly an alternative media character, but he's on Alex Jones. And, you know, he
was pushing the fear. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So suddenly you get, you know, when this thing occurs, it's like, you know, Noam Chomsky with 9-1-1. I mean, he's very reasonable. Everything is fine. And you're clear-minded. And then he goes, Nada, don't think about this. Just let me take your mind someplace else. Things happen that are strange sometimes. I don't want you to, you know, so suddenly you can see that the Lifetime actors are clever. And today, Adams had something just made me laugh out loud. His headline is Zombie Apocalypse. The coronavirus is now known to alter brain function and make victims aggressive and disoriented. And then he has underneath.
Are you serious?
Oh, absolutely. And then he says, and then he has under, he goes, this is not a satire. And it goes on, it goes, natural. If you have seen the recent news about some coronavirus victims aggressively coughing at other people as a kind of assault, see link below, you know that something is very, very strange with this virus.
Are they biting people?
Well, let me go on. Not only does it infect the nervous system and utterly destroy some people's sense of smell and taste, we now know it alters brain function by destroying brain tissue. This leads certain people to exhibit rabies-like behavior with aggressive attacks that spread the virus like something right out of a zombie movie. So, you
know. I thought you were like laid up in bed with a horrible cough.
Yeah. but then you ate my brain. So, you know, this, you know, you can see that people like this have been created, you know, as actors, you know, to have a certain role. You trust him because he's hip. He's an alt media guy. And then when it comes to this operation, you can see his function. He is now in motion and he's going to take the trust and convert it into absolute fear. And here, it is almost laughable, but well, actually it is quite laughable, that he's talking about, you know, zombies. He's actually talking about, you know, men losing their mental capacities and then biting people. So there it is. That's kind of like an example of what we're up against at this point, because you know, this comes in, this sort of information will come in on the smartphone. You can see all of the different historical trajectories of mind control are in place in Adam's article. You know, you have the Hollywood horror films, you have the development of the computer. You know, you couldn't get this into someone's the smartphone. And then you have the Lifetime actor component, you know, someone who's set up because he was against the government and certain things, but all of a sudden now you're supposed to trust him in this as being a real, you know, as being real data. And so it gets into your mind. And now, you know, you have this idea that if there are people who trust this individual, there are people out there who are basically now, you know, manning the hatches in their homes to defend against zombies.
Yeah. You know?
So this is kind of now someone like that. Think about someone who's actually moved by that information. Well, gee, Tim, it's not someone who's going to be able to do a good job on studying the data in regards to the virus, is it?
No, not at. It's I mean, you're familiar with that tape made by supposed Dr. Ellen Smith, I think, at Elmhurst Hospital in New York.
Yeah.
And she made a video of her walking through the hospital, reporting on how the hospital is overwhelmed and I guess she's supposed to be a doctor, but then instead of helping out, she's videotaping. And they post this videotape. Of course, it's a violation of the law to do that. But she does it anyway. And it's posted with a music in the background, like eerie music.
Zombies.
You know, okay, nice music, nice edit, sound editing there. Got to add the mood or the feeling to what she's saying. She's claiming that they're short of ventilators. Of course, she shows a bank of ventilators aren't being used, then she claims there's a shortage. So maybe they weren't prepared yet, but that's a contradiction there. Then she goes outside and videotapes all these people waiting in line, gets to be tested, and she's saying some of them are sick and coughing, although I didn't see any of them cough in the videotape. This is at Elmhurst Hospital. This perked the curiosity of people who are actually in the area, and more than a few went by the at least a few went by the hospital the next day, and it was virtually empty, or just wasn't anything going on outside. The tents are empty. One of the video journalists asked the doctor, you know, are there any coronavirus patients inside? And he just nonchalantly said, oh, there's a number of them inside, and he walked calmly away. Yeah. And so there wasn't any activity. And a number of these, of course, throughout the country, is people have been posting these videotapes. And it's again, one of this, it's a contradiction, because we're told, I mean, the governor of New York is doing a press conference, and behind him is a bustling hospital, looks very busy. And then the next day, it's empty. What do we make of that? Well, you know, the media does fake things for purposes of dramatics and boosting ratings, keeping things interesting. We all are familiar with the weather reporter claiming the hurricane is a lot stronger than it is, and pretending how strong the wind is, because behind him you see someone gingerly walk behind him. You know, that happens every once in a while. We're familiar with CNN's attempts during the first Gulf War. At least they were filming in studio a fake Scud missile attack. How many of those, were completed and then fed to the public as real missile attacks? How much of that war was indeed fake? You have to ask yourself that question, because CNN made its bones on that war. This is one of the things. There was a quote here. This is a comment that I pulled from a YouTube, and it said, New York Governor Cuomo made a comment in his press briefing that New York City hospitals were being swamped, and he specifically mentioned Elmhurst Hospital being overrun with patients and people wanting to get tested. This was accompanied by a video showing a crowd of people outside the hospital. However, another video surfaced from the same day showing that the same exterior as the official video used by Cuomo, except the ER was empty inside and out, and the testing tent was vacant with nobody around. So who do we believe here? I know who I choose to believe, and it's not the crooked politician or someone who works for the hospital in question. These videos are available on Dana Ashley's YouTube channel, and they are also showing empty hospital, ER, and testing tents from L.A., Kentucky, even Germany. So maybe it's – I'll jump down to the final paragraph. Maybe it's time to start questioning the mainstream propaganda networks on the sources of all their information. After all, if they would use fraudulent video footage to push their very questionable narrative, why would they refrain from incorrect statistics and numbers of infected and diseased victims of the virus? I think he's referring to, there was a report on CBS News first there was a report out of Italy, a hospital in Italy that was overwhelmed. They showed the ICU unit. It's very busy. Then there's a report in CBS News about the New York's hospitals, and they used the same stock footage for the New York hospital.
Yeah, I mean, that was classic.
Yeah.
Now, I just, in another direction here, I wanted to point out that the mind control is very visible now in the statistics. And I was going to reference a really important piece of science that came out last week. It's a paper, bunch of scientists from Oxford, which is interesting because it's Oxford is also where the first model of COVID came out. And that was the one that they based the lockdown on. That one had like 250,000 people dying in the UK. So this was like basically a, global killer. 250,000 people are going to die based on a model, right? This was the justification that was given. And the lead scientist was a guy named Ferguson. Well, in the last 10 days, there's, you know, as the data moves forward, other people who are, you know, epidemic statistics have come forward and criticized this. And they said, well, what are you talking about? What are your numbers? And so then Ferguson backtracked and he said, well, okay, it's not 250,000. It's going to be less than 20,000. So there goes over 90% of the first model. And this was at the same time that the UK then decided, well, in that case, we're not going to even call it a severe, you know, contagious disease. We're going to downgrade it to, you know, something which isn't even in the pandemic category.
Didn't he take it down to 5,700 or something?
Yeah, well, that was later. But but it gets better because then there's this one really courageous woman. She's a scientist there, Sunetra Gupta. And she is a golden light. Thank heavens for her, because she went to the media and she said, you know, why are people using that model? And she came out with a paper called Fundamental Principles of Epidemic Spread Highlight the Immediate Need for Large-Scale Serologic Surveys to Assess the Stage of the COVID Epidemic. So I really would hope everyone who listens to this who is like interested in the numbers of this to check out that paper. It's online, Fundamental Principles of Epidemic Spread. If you just Google that with her last name is Gupta, G-U-P-T-A, it'll come right up. And then you'll get some scientism, but it's not too hard to understand because what she's saying is that you can actually determine like how many people out of 1,000 are going to die long before the disease runs a course. There are really well-known models. And this would, remember, people, you know, you can say, well, it's a model, you know, it's this isn't real. Well, yeah, but a model is what we base the lockdown upon. Mm-hmm. And here is a model that actually has some data. And if you look at, if you just go down to the model that she uses to basically fit to what's going on in the UK, it's, you have the projections from a model, and then you have the actual deaths over time. And anyway, I won't go into the scientism. It's a little complicated. But the bottom line is, she goes, you know, the model that fits most is this disease will hospitalize 1 out of 1,000. 1 out of 1,000. Now, in the UK, what do they got in that little place, like 50 million or something like that? So that's a lot of people. That would be what, like 50,000? Mm-hmm. Is that 1%? No. It would be, gosh darn it. So you've got like 50,000. Okay. Yeah. Well, she's saying that there'll be like, you know, 20,000 tops, 5,000 people at the most you'd have, you know, or that in that range. And the point is, it's just so dramatically less than the numbers. And that's where I think this is where he came up with the 5,000 number, because now the model is really kind of has a lot of data in it, because you start out, you know, before the first infection, and then you go forward, and then you go up to the death point where they're starting to have deaths, and then you see the trajectory. Well, anyway, I'm sorry to have gone sideways into the numbers and stuff, but I just want to point out what she says is the model not only shows that it's only 1 out of 1,000 people that will be hospitalized, 1 out of 1,000 people, but that 68% of the British have already been exposed to the virus. By the time you get to the point where you have the deaths now, the models are very clear. It looks like 68% of the people in the UK have already been exposed, and in Italy, by 6/3/2020, you should have 80% of the population exposed. Now, the point that is so important is that in Italy and in the UK, at the point that the lockdown occurred, which was you've already had the whole virtually what's called herd immunity, because you've got close to 6% of the population exposed. So the whole lockdown Because remember, what you have is the period of time where the disease runs rampant. No one knows it's there. It's just infecting whatever it wants. Then you have the first infections, and then you have the first death sometime later, right? So these three different phases. The lockdown occurred after the first death. So it already, the disease had already basically, the horse had gotten out of the barn. So just scientifically, there really wasn't any reason to do the lockdown. You weren't really going to have a dramatic, you know, change. The people who are dying now were already infected before the lockdown occurred, typically, or the process by which they were going to be infected, the family member who was going to infect, had already happened. So anyway, her model is, is public data. You can go, you can check every day, you can compare the numbers, and you can, you know, this is like real science. And the reason I kind of went sideways, is just this is the opposite of panic. This is the opposite of like looking in your smartphone and reading about that now you've got zombies with COVID rabies that'll be in your neighborhood. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So the fact that you actually have to do, if you read the paper, you'll see you actually have to do a little bit of arithmetic to even understand what she's saying. But I hope everyone does this, because you would get to a calm place and a knowledgeable place and a place where you could actually, when your neighbor is like preparing, you know, for the zombie apocalypse, you can talk to them and from an informed place and try to get some calmness back. Because to break the mind control, you have to stop the panic.
Yeah, and also the you're getting these absurd recommendations from the scientists, the experts. We're told now the fate of our nation is in their hands because they're the experts. This is technocracy. This is scientism now coming to the fore. Of course, they're doing the bidding of the oligarchs. We can talk a little bit about that. Why the hysteria? Why Dr. Fauci, I guess, talked about his desire at least to see a nationwide policy on shutting things down. I think there are as many as 9 states that haven't done that yet. It's ridiculous because even if you buy into this idea, this is a unique threat posed by the COVID-19 virus, is conditions in New York City or in Manhattan aren't going to be the same conditions in Montana or South Carolina. People's health aren't going to be the same. So the same threat isn't going to be there. If you live in an area that has dirtier air, you're going to have more higher vulnerability for these things. So why would you impose the same restrictions? Well, it makes no sense.
No sense. So the first thing you do, and this paper does a great job, is you would test to see what percent of the population is positive already.
Yeah.
Because if you're at 68%, you can just forget about it.
Yeah.
You're not going to slow anything down. So this is the very first thing. So this is one of the things she says. She goes, look, you know, if you're going to make, you know, political policy, you really got to know what you're talking about. The guy who did the first study had no clue. He was just, this is like you say, he was a scientist that apparently was owned by the oligarchs, and he brought out a panic paper.
It was used to justify the what we call the lockdown now. Yeah,
exactly. And we're still using this crazy model that Ferguson was the head scientist. It's called the imperial model in the press, if people want to look at it.
So you have that retraction or revised, you know, and I think the U.S.
Three times. He revises it now all the time. But he started out with 250,000.
Yeah, and I think in the U.S. it was 2 million down to 20,000.
Yeah, that's right. And then, and so you get you start out with the panic number, you know, comes on the iPhone. It creates the bead of sweat on people's foreheads. And now they can't think, you see.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Where they want them, and now, you know, suddenly you started getting news bulletins on the iPhone, you know, about how, you know, the hospitals are overrun and stuff, and so they're able to use all of the mind control technology and in a package to get the people from going.
Well,
here's
more of a double bind. I saw an interview with Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, and you know that controversy with the respirators.
Yeah.
Like 1,000 of them warehoused up in New York weren't distributed to the hospitals. And
yeah.
Governor Cuomo says, well, they haven't been distributed yet because they're not needed yet. But you just told me the hospitals are overwhelmed. Which is it?
Right.
And then they show this makeshift hospital that the Army Corps of Engineers established. And it's supposed to be, you know, the overwhelming hospitals. And all the beds are empty.
Yeah. I mean, well, they are... you know, able to keep, I mean, at this point, really what you have is basically horror porn that is just flooding the airways to keep people panicked. The goal of the media at this point is panic. That's all it is. That's really
okay. What's the end game here? What's the objective then?
Well, I mean, they will keep us locked down and transform America by getting rid of the small businesses.
Yeah, it's like Agenda 2030 being carried out under the guise of public health.
You talk about 33% unemployment. Well, who are these? These are typically hand-to-mouth people. These were the small business employees. Mm-hmm. This was really the great kind of real heart of America. Well, now they've all lost their jobs. They're gone. So now the government has to come in and basically be the source of income for them, which of course now means that they're financially enslaved. And that's really, I think, the purpose of this. This is a maneuver to harden the slavery. I mean, if you think about 9/11, what really ended up, being permanent. Well, the slave training at the airport, mm-hmm. where you stand in lines and you get radiated. Well, this is all moving us into what will come after this, which will be just more hard-edged slavery. That kind of standing in lines to get radiated will be to go to your local store.
Well, now they're talking about accepting the fact that we're going to have unemployment rates in excess of 30%, as if this is what we have to adjust to because of the virus. And I saw a headline that said the virus will have more of an economic impact than the recent economic crash. Well, no, the economic crash was a product of you shutting the economy down. And a correction was going to occur anyway. The market's so rigged and bloated. These things occur anyway. They're designed for a pump and dump scenario anyway. But I'm saying is this, the rapid crash that they engineered was there to crash the economy, to cause asset prices to plummet, to destroy small businesses. So you can, again, create a situation where everyone is dependent, terrified, traumatized and weak. And so now you can impose, your technocracy, your feudal system that you want. I mean, Bill Gates is now for some reason, Bill Gates, who made a crappy operating system, is now the guru for, the people ask him questions, what should we do, what should be done, and he comes across with this ID 2020 idea where everyone gets a tattoo to show that they've been properly vaccinated. He's preaching the gospel of vaccinations. Of course, he's the one that, working with Johns Hopkins and the World Economic Forum, that put together event 201 scenario that was war gamed in October of this year about this very scenario playing out. They're asking him about this stuff as if he's some sort of expert. I mean, who is he?
He's a lifetime actor.
But he's nonchalantly talking about, well, we have to decide what's important. Who's going to, obviously food's important. How are we going to supply these things? So what they're saying is they're getting people used to the idea of rationing.
Yeah, and he uses this like cheerful kind of nerd vocabulary. He says, really, we need to stay in our homes for about 100 days. And I know that's super tough. I know it's just super tough. And so he's got this kind of sophomoric vocabulary that makes it seem like it's the proposition is, reasonable.
Gates Foundation going to pay everyone's mortgage and grocery bills and utility bills for that time period?
This is why I've been so attempting this week to get protests starting, because the longer we wait, the less economy there'll be to basically have the people have anything they can work with to move forward in a real way that we have some kind of control, and the more it's going to be a kind of starving, depopulated, weakened herd that'll be begging for government largesse, and that's going to be just very, very easy for the transhumanist thing with the vaccinations and stuff, and they'll be able to
They'll say in order to get your allotment of food, you need to get a vaccine.
Of course, if you're not, it's already this has already kind of gone on in Australia, where to get a job you have to have mandatory vaccination proof. So what the program...
All we have are Impossible Burgers or something. You know,
so yeah,
you
yeah, that's right. And so the program will be, you know, you've got to be vaccinated in order to qualify for the, you know, Workers' Paradise food program. And the vaccines will be both probably sterilizing. I mean, particularly if Gates is, you know, he's always there. His father's head of Planned Parenthood, and Gates is always trying to get everyone to stop having babies. And then they'll also dumb you down. And so you'll be semi-autistic and sterile, but, you know, they'll have some kind of slave activity for you to take care of. And then you're off the planet as soon as they can, you know, they're done with you.
And so, I mean, you know, the recent economic savior package that they passed, they call it relief package, the $2 trillion
bill.
And also it establishes a $450 billion capital base for the Exchange Stabilization Board to create $4 trillion in asset purchases, which the Fed will then monetize and then hand over the liability over to the Treasury. So the Treasury now holds a big stake in the Fed. And people are saying this is essentially nationalizing the Fed. It's more, what it does is it just admits what it's always been anyway. Yeah.
What it does is it nationalizes the stock market. I mean, basically what they're trying to do is you're going to end up with the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. And, of course, remember, the Federal Reserve is just these private banking families.
Yeah.
Whatever was owned by the public will be now owned by these oligarchs.
And apparently this outfit, this BlackRock outfit,
And that's just a Jewish banking. Yeah, it's a Jewish basically hedge fund. I mean that's not a good characterization. It's a hedge fund manned at or at least commanded by a Jewish guy, and it has ties into all of the neocon, you know, kind of financial world. You just couldn't pick a more malevolent and nefarious agency to give them control over all of the shares of America's public companies. But again, at this point, the public is so panicked. You know, they're so worried about the rabies coronavirus neighbor and their own job going away that they can't even, there's no protest. I mean, really, it's you know, the maneuver, you have to admit, it's very clever. They have created the panic, and then they onset it so rapidly that no one really had a chance to basically come to their senses, right?
Well, we've been a lot of speculation how they're going to impose something like this, and they did it through the cover of a public health emergency.
Yeah, and we're here to help. We're just trying. We're not trying to enslave anybody. You have to stay in your homes, or we'll shoot you. But we're here to try to preserve life. We're trying, you know, and if you come out into the public and talk to that individual, you could infect him, so we'll have to shoot you as well. So, I mean, it's the logic is crude. I mean, it's not particularly sophisticated, but it's you know, effective, particularly when you back it up by controlling all of the police and there's enough authority that they have complete control over, like the governors, people like Newsom and Cuomo, that they can just start the ball rolling and everyone falls in line. And now, I mean, I got a report from someone who's in some like place in Oklahoma, I think it was, and just some rural tumbleweed place. And she goes, you know, they've got a curfew now, a curfew
from Oklahoma,
10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And she goes, it doesn't make much sense because, well, heck, there's nothing out except rattlesnakes and tumbleweeds. But, you know, we got to do. We got to stay in the home, you know.
Well, what does the curfew accomplish at 10 p.m. and 11 o'clock at night in Oklahoma?
Well, particularly in light of, you know, like real science in terms of the nature of the coronavirus. But you see, the public have been panicked to the point where they really can't do much. The media is really deeply controlled. They've even got the small newspapers bought out. And so there isn't any source of information for people to base a protest around.
I think there's probably a sizable minority who's calling BS on this and just simply impatient with it. But they have no agency to respond because where is there any organized political resistance? Where are there any political establishments like legislatures, political parties, newspapers to start calling the people out on this? Right now, they're facing no organized political resistance. Even the churches have shut down.
Yeah,
where you might expect some resistance, and even you have They've canceled, more or less, they've convinced the Catholic Church to cancel Holy Week.
Well, I mean, don't worry, they'll open it up again. I mean, I just love the idea of opening. We'll open up the church again. You know, it's like it's an amusement park.
Yes.
That they own. You know, religion is supposed to be protected in the Constitution. I mean, you're not supposed to have the government being able to choose when to open it up because somebody sneezes. This is a clear violation of the Constitution, which, of course, is also a breach with the not being able to have peaceful assembly,
mm-hmm.
where we would get together and talk about these things. So you can see in these details how, you know, they've been planning this for, well, basically centuries, you know, where they could.
Well, I mean, as recently as 2010, there was Operation Lockstep by the Rockefeller Foundation, who, what you're seeing here, what they call for is you know, cessation of air travel, the shutting down of the global economy, the breaking down of long supply chains, businesses being shuttered, people being in their homes. And they think this was a part of Operation Lockstep that the Rockefeller Foundation wargamed, or at least did a scenario in 2010. And of course, then we have Event 201 most recently. And of course, our friend Bill Gates constantly talking about, oh, the virus.
And remember, when you look at that draconian global martial law, you have to remember that the justification is a disease that will hospitalize 1 in 1,000.
Yeah, I mean, in these scenarios, at least in Event 201 and in Lockstep, there are like 67 million deaths or something.
Right. I mean, and you see, but the thing is, here we have a Hollywood version of 67 deaths. We have 100 million deaths in terms of the volume of horror porn.
Yeah.
In terms of the volume of headlines. Remember, I talked last week about the local newspaper, you know, like waiting.
Yeah.
Oh, it's here.
Yeah.
You know, it's just insane that the public is so susceptible, but they are. And there's
they really accept the destruction of the global economy just because of a lousy virus, supposedly, that has taken thousands of lives?
They won't really be given a choice. They will move so quickly through the process. That's why you're going to see the thing accelerate, because they're going to move to, you know, kind of a global martial law.
About the mind control, like telling people to wear masks as they walk around.
Yeah, and that's another thing. See, the masks, I'm sure that'll become like a, you know, like they'll be shot if you don't have a mask on.
It'd be selfies and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and the mask is a way, basically, you can see it's an identification, and it's a way to keep the panic at a high level, you know, because it changes the appearance of people, changes the way they breathe, you know, and look. It'll make them less likely to go out. It's not going to, you know, help the, you know, kind of social activity between, you know, teenagers and things. I mean, it's just, it's malevolent as can be in the way that they're, in what they're thinking about doing with it. But it's all done under the auspice of, you know, we got it. We can't let you infect someone. We can't have that person come down with coronavirus, which is why that paper is so important.
Well, how come no one has asked Dr. Fauci? He's a doctor, infectious diseases. And of course, one part of avoiding infectious diseases is being healthy. Is what's the effect of telling people to shelter in place, stay inside to save lives, being deprived of vitamin D, not going out exercising in the springtime, especially with children? What's the health effect of that? Aren't you making them more vulnerable to infectious diseases?
Losing your job and having no economy. What's the effect of that?
Of your parents, but losing their job and you can't eat. Some ration that Bill Gates thinks you might have deserved.
So you can see the slavery is not going to be very pleasant. And I've been, you know, begging people, you know, saying, look, get out and protest. Demand that the media.
Come on. It's saying we're saving you from the virus so you can starve to death in 5 weeks.
Yeah.
It's.
Isn't that a little weird? So there are people who are starting to wake up. And it's interesting, you know, it's tragic, but.
The authorities can't walk this back. Is this going to create a credibility problem? I mean, I'm amazed that they have any at this point. But I'm saying they got to maintain some credibility. I mean, the people broadly, I don't know, maybe I'm overestimating, but people can't be that stupid.
No, they'll lose. They'll get to the point. I mean, their goal here is to be beyond the need to have credibility. They want to have a kind of mental and martial control over the entire human population that will not prevent any rebellion. And even like it'll be like the Brave New World in Huxley. I mean, the people will not have any negative thoughts. Will be either the individual will be shot or are given drugs. You know it. Now, this is their goal, but as you point out, this seems like, well, really? Can you actually get the whole human race to go along with this program? The quicker we start to protest, the better.
Well, they're willing to kill a lot of people. I mean, HUL said that.
Believe me, Tim.
Yeah.
We're going to have blood in the streets one way or another. There isn't any doubt about it. And I was listening to an interview with a cop. It was the Project Veritas. And I was kind of pissed off at him because they were visually representing the cop who I think was in New York. And they were interviewing him. And he was talking about what nonsense it was. Right. And you really don't want to expose individuals like that because they'll get fired.
Yeah.
We really want to have both in the police force and in the National Guard as many human beings as possible. And that's the one hope, is that I'm sure the authority level is as...
police chiefs are all installed by, you know...
Yeah, yeah. The what you're going to need to not have large-scale, population reduction by automatic weapons is you're going to need to have people inside the National Guard and in the local police departments that won't put up with it. And then if that happens, then you might get some of the prepper types to stand up and start defending themselves as well. But, at the moment, this is just, the government, if they decide to shoot you on the grounds that, I'll give an example, the Filipino president.
Yeah.
Who's, I think, one of these controlled individuals. He made the statement. He said, if you are in violation of the lockdown, we will shoot you. He just flat out said. And then that became a huge news story here. See, they're getting us ready for it.
Yeah. Oh, he's tough.
He's tough. But you see, there's no moral. They put it in the context of someone trying really hard to save people.
Well, and, like in India, they've locked down. How do you lock down India? But basically, people are deprived of working and people live day to day to eat. I mean, it's that, the so-called untouchables. And now they're predicting, as people migrate because they can't eat, they go forage for food and find someplace where they can survive. And just think about the public health, like sanitation problems that creates. India's bad enough, but all the disease you're going to spread that way. And then, CDC will come and say, look, there's a new virus in India.
It's like I was saying, there's blood in the streets. I mean, not necessarily, violent, but one of the estimates I was reading is 100 million people could starve to death in India over the next 12 months because the food chain.
They locked it down.
They are, you see, in India, you are hand to mouth.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't have a lot of excess calories to work through in their fat stores. So, when you deprive them of work for food and you don't have a system in place to feed them, you could have really rapid population reduction. And I mean, and I hate to say it, but man, I am 100% certain that that is one of the major goals here, is to move toward the Georgia Guidestone numbers of 500 million humans. And that means that 7.5 billion have to leave. And, so this will be, you'll see, I would bet certainly over the next 24 months, a billion less humans, because you're going to have both reduced birth rate, obviously, and then you'll have starvation. Mm-hmm. In America here, people go, well, it's America. There's always going to be Costco. Well, wait a second, just back up. We talked last week about all the little components inside our food chains that make them work. When you take away all of the small businesses, are you sure these food chains are actually going to be able to deliver the food? I think for a few months, yeah, but over a year, when all you have is the Masonic government that doesn't really care if you live or die, No, I don't think so. I think that if we don't stop this, if we don't open up the country quickly, force the government somehow to do it, you're going to be looking at, you're going to be looking at starvation in America. I mean, in my opinion, it's just inevitable. How are you going to, keep the food chain working with 40% of the population unemployed?
You can't.
I mean, who's going to pay for this? You know, the government. You think the government's going to pay for that? I mean, and if the government does, if they write checks for like trillions and trillions of dollars, what'll happen is the dollar will stop working, and then we'll all be starving because then nothing will be able to be purchased, and now we're on a barter system.
And people don't realize is that the certain standard of living that we're enjoying relies on those tens of millions of people working, producing something, building something, and bringing things to market and going about their day, and with the shame about that is that a lot of the people that are immediately thrown out of work are the real productive people, whereas the bureaucrats, the paper pushers who can quote work from home, can last longer, and they look at it as sort of a staycation or something, and they're less apt to be rebellious anyway because they think they still have more to lose, they still have a retirement they think or a pension or they still think they have investments, so they're not going to do anything.
But also their assets to the system they're trying to set up. Look, it goes back. Remember, it goes back to, LSD and the personal computer. I mean, the people who are at home online, they can be tracked. Every keystroke can be seen by the government. So all of that economy is inside the government computer control. Mm-hmm. They can fire you. They can cut off your means of communication. They have you in the system. Because you're using the computer. And so I think that group will probably flourish because the techno kids, because they're useful for the world they envision, where you have computers, everything is recorded on video camera. Everything that is exchanged between humans is recorded. Now, this is like basically beyond Brave New World, because now you have the oligarchs' capacity to see all human activity. It's all going to be recorded,
And one thing people get clear is this is not a public health crisis. It's not a pandemic. That's a cover. This is a economic warfare. It's taking down, resetting, or the taking down the planned demolition of the U.S. economy. And that's where you have to look at it now, because what they're saying is, whether it's 6 weeks or 2 weeks, you can't do that without destroying the economy. So now you have to get in the position, why are they trying to do this? Why are politicians who usually try to get reelected on maintaining the economy hell-bent on destroying it and finding justification for it and blaming the virus? Why is this occurring? Well, they've done this in other countries in other ways. I mean, look at what they did to Libya in 2011. They destroyed that economy and robbed it. The drummed up civil war in Syria, which also involved crisis actors and fake gas attacks and the white helmets and these things, all types of staging, media manipulation. The lives that were disrupted in Syria were done because people higher up, princes and palaces, so to speak, were strategizing or engaging in some sort of geopolitical wrangling to unseat the Assad government for whatever reason. But the thing is, that was never legitimate anyway, but they didn't mind disrupting the lives of hundreds of thousands, not millions of people, and also killing a lot of people, resulting in refugee crisis, mass starvation, and these things. Look what happened in Yemen, where the U.S.-backed war against Yemen by Saudi Arabia, where millions were subjected to famine because of the war. So this occurs throughout the world. And just Americans, after I get the idea, is that maybe now they're in there, the sights of the oligarchs. Their time to be taken down.
It's about time. I mean, but also it's interesting that of the worldwide nature of the operation. And
yes,
for that, you want to go back into the history of the Masonic, world domination, which has existed for several hundred years. I mean, India, the lodges set up the opium trade, right? And even though they controlled the Raj and eventually left it, it's at least to my mind, it's they put in stooges. They put in people that were basically like the oath-taking, individuals they put in Japan. Mm-hmm. When MacArthur was there, he set up a Masonic control over Japan. If you go by these countries, Chile, they all have the same problem. Canada, You know, so you have this cesspool of Masonic control that is everywhere, and that's one of the reasons they're able to get this this kind of a project done, because you have the whole world basically, you know, in lockstep, you know, with social distancing and with accepting starvation and the fake virus narrative. The only two countries, well, there's three countries that I'm aware of that aren't really. I mean, Mexico, which is actually trying, but the public just is.
The government's too dysfunctional.
You know, it's just like, what, you can't tell the drug cartel. They're a little uncontrollable. And the average Mexican guy is not, just is used to not paying attention to the government. So you see scenes, movies of them, people at beaches and stuff. It's going to be very interesting, because this will put the lie to the claims of the, you know, like the how beneficial the social distancing is.
Yeah.
And the other two countries are Brazil and Sweden. Both of them have been able to resist the dictates. And so again, you're going to have two countries that you can look at the statistics. And when you end up with, you know, very similar statistics to the ones that did draconian lockdowns, this will at least, you know, be a signal to the, you know, the public that the lockdowns had a political purpose, not a medical one.
Yeah. The Brazilian leader president actually says as well, I can't destroy the economy. That would kill far more.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if Trump had said, well, but anyway.
It's like, it's common. I mean, this is something that a lot of people are saying. How come no political figures are saying it? No one major figure in the media are saying this.
Yeah. I put a Facebook, what's on your mind thing that got passed around. And I just said, it was just a little piece of verbiage. And I said, where is the government's analysis showing that the worst case for the virus will be better than the effects of shutting down the economy and taking away our freedom? Mm-hmm. Where is the analysis? You know, of course, you know, there isn't any, never will be, because panic is required, and it would take you in the other direction from panic. That would take you into thought. So,
well, I mean, how come just someone asked the president? Well, I mean, the St. Louis Fed came out with a study that said that if this shutdown continues, you're going to be confronted with 32% unemployment. What are the public health consequences of mass unemployment sustained over a long period of time? Have you given any thought of how many people will die from that?
Brilliant. And let me tell you something. That's exactly why those staged events that are called press conferences will never bring up such a question.
Yeah.
Because that question in and of itself, right, in and of itself, just shows that the whole thing is just a distraction for basically a slave state. So, you know, I was pleased last week to see all of the people who'd filmed hospitals. You know, some of it was going on the week before, and I, you know, last week we talked about how useful that would be, and then it really took off this last week. There's just hundreds of videos showing that the hospitals are empty. You know, they're not empty, but they're not going to be overwhelmed. The virus just doesn't have that kind of effect. There's nothing to be afraid of. It's just a bad flu. And if you lose a few people, man, it's going to be a lot better to go that route than the one the government's trying to tell us, where, you know, we're going to go into slavery and a perpetual lockdown. We'll see. You know, last week we talked about, well, when will the public call the government's bluff on the horror porn? I don't know how much longer they can even, you know, because it's going to be next week or the week after, you're going to get on the right hand side of the bell curve and all of these, you know,
the surge they're talking about, the tsunami.
You're going to see that it's not going to happen. There isn't going to be, you know, thousands of people. Maybe they'll try some kind of holographic, you know, coronavirus, computer generated pandemic, but there aren't going to have any human beings. And then you're going to, the public may start wondering, you know, and it's just, you know, one hopes that local police, local sheriffs and the National Guard that, you know, still remember their parents, just will be a bulwark against just, you know, at that point, the government deciding to shoot people that just want to go out in the sunshine. You know, it's just, it's really coming up to a critical moment in American history. I mean, in the next 30 days, you're going to see the future of the nation really is going to be determined. And so it's a good time to be healthy. It's a good time to be strong. And it's a good time to be in the streets with your brothers and sisters. Because if we don't, if we just accept it, believe me, your wish you had, you know, so.
So, yeah, well, a nation of sheep begets a government of wolves, so.
Yep, that's right. So anyway, good luck to everyone this week. Let's try to make it a good week for our side.
Yeah, so, okay, Joe, enjoy the weekend.
Right. Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.